time going over to 122.
Well, let me ask you a preliminary question, Ms. Gortz, if I can. Where in your petition for review did you raise this Kaufman issue? There are two petitions for review at issue here. Neither one of them cites Kaufman. And as I think you know, the law says if you don't raise it in the petition for review, you can't raise it on appeal. Did you preserve this issue?
In the reply brief, I quoted a case that said that if the argument was made and raised in hearing and a judge fails to rule on it, then it's still preserved for purposes of appeal. And
which
in our
hearing,
case,
which hearing are you talking about?
To
the magistrate?
Yes.
Okay, I get that you made it in the front of the magistrate, but there is law that says you have to raise it in your petition for review with the district court. Did you raise this Kaufman issue in your petition for review?
No. The magistrate disposed of the Kaufman argument in her ruling, and then following post-petition, and then Judge Labuda again disposed of Kaufman because they were aware it was an issue. And the case that I cited in my reply brief indicates that as long as an issue was raised during the proceedings, even if the judge declined to rule on it, it still is an issue that can come into play at the Court of Appeals. And in our case, both the magistrate and judge did discuss it and why they felt that it was proper to do what they did despite Kaufman. So in our case, our argument is that the Kaufman reservation was effectively done. No one has argued otherwise. The court didn't find otherwise. And instead of dismissing the motion because the Kaufman reservation spoke to whether the remodeling business was doing better, the magistrate and then later the judge decided that they would entertain the motion, even though the Kaufman reservation wasn't met, on the basis of inheritance. And they say that explicitly in both the magistrate's decision and Judge Labuda's ruling, that the basis for entertaining the motion was inheritance. We argue that that's not proper under Kaufman. You can only raise the future contingency, which in this case was Shirley, whether his remodeling business was doing better, he was earning more income. Now, both orders talk about this, and they say that his remodeling business is not doing better. They note that he's losing money. Now, at that point in time, there is a problem because Kaufman has failed. The future contingency has not occurred.
So let me ask you a question, Ms. Gritzer. Under your analysis of 1410, 114, and 122, when there's a Kaufman reservation, that prevails over everything else, regardless of whether somebody has a substantial inheritance or wins of the lottery or anything else?
Well, that is our argument, that there is nothing I've read in the case law that says that after you've established the specific jurisdiction and you've set a time that maintenance is going to run for, you set a time that you're going to review maintenance, and you've said under what circumstances you're going to review. Our argument is, if you're going to explicitly state a time of maintenance, a duration of maintenance, and you're stating when you're willing to look at this again, and then that fails, then it doesn't seem logical to say, well, if it does fail, we'll go over to 1410.122.
Well, as Mr. Hardin argued in his briefs, the apparent reason for that is because there are different standards for either establishing maintenance under 1410.114 and the Kaufman exception to that on the one hand, and 1410.122 for modifying maintenance when the conditions for it become unfair.
That's very true, and that's where I look again to what Falwell says, which is that in Falwell, they found that there was insufficient findings to preserve under Kaufman, okay? But they did look at whether it was reversible error to even talk about 1410.122. And they said that because of the nature of the case and the argument that was, you know, the discussion of 1410.122 and the actual result of the case, it wasn't reversible error. Then again, in Connell, which is another Court of Appeals case, again, they talk about well, was it reversible error to even discuss 1410.122? So in a number of cases, they do discuss, if Kaufman is the reservation, is it proper to even discuss it?
Okay, let me ask you this question. If there had not been a Kaufman reservation, do you have any other issues with the 122 ruling?
Yes, we do. We see clear error for a number of reasons. On 122, you need to find unconscionability and unfairness. You need to find that there's a change of circumstances. You need to review the circumstances of the parties and decide whether that is continuing and significant enough that you really need to change maintenance. Part of that analysis under Swing is looking at good faith. So as part of that analysis, if, for example, husband is earning less money, as was the case in Swing, you look at, is he doing that deliberately to avoid maintenance? And if the answer is no, it's a good faith decision. It's reasonable.
Where does good faith appear in the statute? It talks about a substantial and continuing change of circumstances. Your client, bless his heart, inherited a huge amount of money.
Right.
How is that not a substantial change in circumstances? He's ordered to pay $100 a month in maintenance when he has no job and he has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He inherits a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
How is that not, you may argue whether it's unconscionable, how could you say that that's not a substantial change in circumstances?
It is, and Judge Labuda said that that was the change in circumstances, so I would not argue that it is.
And the
next
part is that, the next part is that it has to render the original maintenance award unfair. It's not, help me here. I don't see where the statute makes it, just a negative on your client. It's just that the original maintenance award in these circumstances becomes unfair because now there's a lot more assets than there were at the beginning. So I guess I'm having a little trouble understanding. Your view of the unfairness and bad faith suggests that the statute talks about your client somehow acting unfairly, but I think the statute talks about the original award becomes unfair. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, I agree that that's what the statute says. It has been interpreted by case law. So the statute says, do we have a change in circumstances? Yes, we do. Do we think it's unconscionable? Well, they said change of circumstances, large inheritance. I assume that the court felt that was. But part of the analysis under the case law, under Swing, is, yeah, but when you're looking at unconscionable, you need to look at why the parties are doing what they're doing. Now, in this case, it was not that my client made a bad faith choice. That the court never made findings, which is part of the error. The court never made findings that, Mr. Harden's remodeling business isn't working out at all, and I think he's doing this on purpose. I think that's bad faith. He's doing this so he doesn't have to pay maintenance. They never found that. The closest they came to even approaching that was, we think he should try harder, okay? But the problem under 122 is that if we get into a standard of proof where you have to show how hard you're trying, as opposed to whether this is good faith or bad faith, and what's going on with these parties, then the analysis begins to be very cumbersome and becomes unfair. Now, the other point in terms of what is fair and what is not fair is Mr. Harden, as you know, inherited a lot of money. And he chose to invest that in real estate because in the past he'd had some success in remodeling and renting and selling real estate. Now, in this case, it wasn't working out. So if you look at where the parties were back at time of divorce, she wasn't doing well. He was losing money on his remodeling business. Then you look at where the parties stand at the time she's trying to modify, and you look at what's happening here, what's changed. He's losing money because his real estate investments and remodeling is not working out at the current time. His income is not. He's actually losing money.
But you're focused on his income, but his assets are enormous compared to what he had before.
And that is when we get into inheritance and how the court has treated that. Now, in the past...
And let me, I don't mean to interrupt you, just to let you know there are 3 minutes and 30 seconds, so I know you wanted to save time for rebuttal, so we'll stop you whenever you want to stop, but go ahead.
Thank you for that reminder. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
So, very briefly on the topic of inheritance, because this is crucial to our case. In the past, the standard of law has been that when someone inherits money, that's theirs. Now, if other people aren't allowed to share it, the only exception has been child support, in some instances under strict criteria that looks at income, what is possible, what should be happening. There's been nothing like that for maintenance. So when you look at, all right, is it fair to tell someone, all right, your investments aren't working out, you don't have any investment income, but you know what? We're going to take your inheritance and give it to your ex-spouse.
Where did the court do that? Where did the court anywhere say, you have to pay for your inheritance? Didn't the court just say, here's your pocket of assets. I now conclude you have assets that allow you to pay maintenance.
Right, and we deem that
to be. It'd be different if the court said, pay the money to the ex-wife.
Right, but when the court record is that his only means of paying this is his inheritance, there's nothing else, then it is clear that what they're doing is transferring money from his inheritance to the spouse because she's having a difficult time. And that's contrary to what the law has been so far. If that is now the law, then we need some structure to explain how that works, because the court never explained how they got to $3,500.
Ms. Crusoe, what about the Grant case that you cite in your brief, where a division of our court held a long time ago that a court could consider inheritance in terms of modifying a maintenance award?
Well, there were a couple of things that were different about it. One was that there wasn't any Kaufman reservation back then. The parties had agreed the court could look at it, and they never said that his only asset was in his inheritance. They said, we think that you're doing better, you can do this, all right? Now, in our case, it's very clear that his only ability to do this is by giving her his inheritance, given what's currently happening. And the court said so, and the court said they really didn't care that he had an inheritance, that was a big deal, and if he needed to pay maintenance out of that was fine.
You still got about a minute left for rebuttal, so.
Thank you. Then I will close. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Teresa Lott, registration 26148, and along with my co-counsel, Dave Rich, we represent Lynn Marlowe, who was the petitioner below, the appellee in this case on appeal. I plan to address four issues today, but I might cut some of those if the court's not interested. My first issue that I plan to address was just the standard of review that overarches all of these, and we believe that to be abuse of discretion.
And if I can bug you, I don't want you to ruin your head of steam here, but if That's you would okay. address this preservation question on Kaufman, I'd be very interested to hear about that too.
Sure, sure. Do you want me to do that now, or say
any
it somewhere?
Any order you
Okay,
like.
Okay. Let me just make a note so I don't forget. Then second, I plan to discuss how the existing, not only statutory, but also common law supports what the magistrate and the district court judge did below in applying 122, even though there had been a Kaufman reservation in the case. Third, I plan to address that it's within the court's discretion to modify the maintenance based on the substantial and continuing change, which was husband's inheritance. That made the original award unfair. And then finally, I was going to address attorney's fees and how the record supports that award. So starting first just with the standard of review, I'm sure the court is aware, virtually every maintenance case out there talks about the standard of review for reviewing maintenance is an abuse of discretion. And virtually every maintenance case talks about an application of the law to the facts, sort of a mixed question. We believe that the abuse of discretion standard governs both the maintenance issue and the attorney's fees issue. And in fact, this was reviewed not only, it was issued by the magistrate and then already reviewed once by the district court, but we do believe that the abuse of discretion is the standard that should govern this court's review as well.
Ms. Locke, normally we review maintenance awards for abuse of discretion, but it seems to me that Ms. Kreutzer is raising a legal issue, which is the interrelationship between the Kaufman exception under 1410.114 and 1410.122. And if it's a legal issue, wouldn't we review that on a de novo basis?
And certainly the court can do that. I think even under de novo, it was a correct ruling. But the case of E-470 provides that when it's a mixed question of law and fact, it can be reviewed under various standards. And maintenance cases have been traditionally reviewed under abuse of discretion. But as the court notes, I think even if it was reviewed under de novo, the court provided or applied the correct law in this case. Which moves me to the second issue, and that is whether or not that if there's a Kaufman reservation in the original order, whether the court can still go beyond that under 122 and review it. And regarding
maybe it would be good to address the preservation issue at this point.
Yes. So regarding the preservation issue, the respondent below, the appellant, didn't raise Kaufman. Kaufman was raised in the original order, so of course the magistrate and the district court judge addressed Kaufman because it was in the original order. But the argument that one...
I'm sorry, when you say the original order, there were two different petitions for review.
Fair enough.
First one was a discovery question more, and I'm not even sure Kaufman was not cited, as I recall, in the first petition. Then we go back, and perhaps Kaufman was argued to the magistrate at the full hearing. Then we have the petition for review.
Correct.
I don't think Kaufman was cited in the petition.
It was not.
And then there was no hearing before the district court on review, right? The
Correct.
Court just ruled on the papers.
Correct.
And the court in that, in the second, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be asking leading questions. I just want to make sure I got it right. I don't think the court in the second order, this order from the second petition for review mentions this Kaufman issue at all. Am I wrong?
I think that's correct. I think that the court was looking at what the magistrate had done and finding that it was accurate what the magistrate had done, but didn't articulate that argument. And when I was talking about the original order, I was meaning back when the permanent orders were entered in this case. The Kaufman case was mentioned because it was preserving the issue or keeping the issue open for later review. So having been mentioned in the original permanent orders, then when the magistrate was reviewing the modification, of course the magistrate mentioned Kaufman. There was never an argument that 122 was inappropriate in that case.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, I think I understand you. So Kaufman was mentioned. I'm going to give it back to you to make sure I understand.
Yes.
So Kaufman was mentioned. Obviously, there was a reservation under Kaufman. And when it comes up on the initial, there was a discovery issue about whether the husband here had to produce documents
Correct.
Relating to the inheritance. Kaufman does not get cited. Well, there was a motion for reconsideration that got treated as a petition for hearing, if I recall, right?
I think that's correct.
Okay. And that petition did not mention this issue about the Kaufman reservation precludes 122
correct.
Review, correct?
Correct.
All right. And then we have the second, there's a hearing. It seems like Kaufman may have been argued to the magistrate when we have the full evidentiary hearing. Is that right?
I don't have the transcript of that, so I cannot articulate whether that's correct.
All right, but in any event, when the petition for review happens, husband did not argue this issue about Kaufman.
Correct.
That we're arguing now.
Correct.
And if I remember right, and I want you to push back,
yes.
correct me if I'm wrong, the district court did not address it.
I believe that's correct, and I should know the answer to that off the top of my head, but because I've reviewed that order multiple times, but
I don't see it, and I'm making sure I'm not missing that there's something nuanced that I'm missing.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
So we don't believe that the issue was preserved, but even if it was preserved, we believe that the magistrate and then the district court were correct at saying that just because there was a Kaufman reservation in the original permanent orders does not preclude any order can be reviewed under 122. And I think that's clear both by the statute and then more importantly probably by existing case law. The statute itself says that any award of maintenance can be reviewed, but then also In Re the Marriage of Sin, which was a Colorado Supreme Court case from 1985, had to do with whether or not the court in that case had issued a maintenance for 2 years, I believe. And so the argument was, well, because they reserved it for 2 years, or not reserved it, because they awarded it for 2 years, it takes it outside of 122. The Supreme Court said, absolutely, that's not right. That the words any decree used in that statute means any decree, just exactly what it says. And it couldn't be much clearer than what the Supreme Court said. I would say even in Kaufman, it's important, in Kaufman there's an important sentence right before the court articulates what the four points are that must be used to preserve the issue. The court in Kaufman says, if the trial court intends to reserve jurisdiction over maintenance pursuant to 114, then it has to do X, Y, and Z. It doesn't say if the court wants to reserve maintenance, period. It says under 114, and the importance of that is 114 is a much lower standard than 122. So I think Kaufman itself answers that question if the language is parsed like that. I would also say that in Re, the Marriage of Falwell that was cited by our opponent also actually is helpful to us, because the court in that case, in fact, it was reserved under Kaufman, because what the court said was that in the oral findings, the judge referenced this future circumstance that may occur, the retirement, I believe it was, and the court evaluated under 114 and 122, and the Court of Appeals said that 122 is a higher standard, and it was proper to evaluate it under that. So the greater includes the lesser, meaning 122 is a higher standard, and it covers everything. If there was a Kaufman review, that's sort of underneath the umbrella of that. Another case that was cited just a minute ago by my opponent, which I don't think was cited in the briefs, but I think it is a really instructive case. It's the Connell case, and it's cited in Falwell and relied on by the court in Falwell. That case was interesting because the court reserved that the house, the party's marital residence was for sale. And so the court reserved jurisdiction under 114 in Kaufman, saying when the house sells, then we're going to review modification or maintenance. And before the house sold, husband filed a motion to modify maintenance. But before it went to hearing, the house had sold. So now we have sort of two competing things. The husband wanted to modify on other grounds. The court is now reviewing it on 114 because that's the reservation. And ultimately, the court reviewed it both under 114 and 122. And the Court of Appeals reviewing that case said, because the husband had filed a separate motion for modification unrelated to the sale of the house, that the 122 standard was appropriate for that evaluation. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here. So I think that the case law already addresses these issues. But I would also say, under a public policy reason, that husband's argument is not a good public policy, because basically what he is saying is the trial court at the time of permanent orders has to shoot a dart at the dartboard, and wherever that lands, that's the only thing that could be used to modify maintenance. That's completely unfair, and it's also within the control of husband whether or not that circumstance has been fulfilled. So under husband's argument, if he didn't go back and, let's say he didn't make an inheritance, but instead he changed professions and he became a stockbroker and he made a ton of money under being a stockbroker. Under his analysis, then he would be saying that that's not what the court reserved maintenance, reserved Kaufman for, so therefore it doesn't fit. Same with winning the lottery or any other circumstance. So it's not good public policy to follow what husband is arguing. And frankly, if she was on the other foot and Miss Marlowe had inherited a bunch of money, and let's say the original award had been for the $3,500, certainly husband would have wanted there to be a change, because now Miss Marlowe didn't need the award of maintenance that she had been awarded. Moving now to the second issue regarding a change in the financial circumstances. So as the court articulated a minute ago, you know, first there needs to be a finding of a substantial and continuing change, and I think husband agrees that there has been a substantial and continuing change. Then it just comes down to whether it's fair or unfair. And under all of the circumstances, which are reviewed for abuse of discretion, the findings of fact of the court found that $100 a month is unfair. The original award in permanent orders was very clear that wife had needs that were not being met, and that the only reason that only $100 was entered was because husband at that time couldn't meet his own needs and also meet those needs. Her needs were the same at the time of permanent orders as they were a couple of years later when it was modified. So those needs were still being unmet. She was nearly destitute and homeless. She only had, I think, $31,000 in assets at the time of the modification. And she's now in her late 60s, past the regular retirement age, and without maintenance, once she doesn't make any income at all, once she retires, her only income will be Social Security, which is $500 and some. And the court found that would be unfair considering what husband had of $1.7 to $1.9 million. The court was not trying to put the wife in a better standard of living than what they had during the marriage, just wanting to meet what the standard was during the marriage. If husband had not inherited money, then there's the potential that he would have gone out and found a job to support himself and would have gone back to where he was earlier in the marriage and his support of both of them. But because he inherited money, he had no incentive whatsoever to go get a job, and that's what the court found. So the court did, in fact, make findings, contrary to what was said a minute ago, the court did make findings that he decided to retire, and his sworn financial statement, which is in the record, he wrote retired, and he did that because of the maintenance, the inheritance, even though he was only in his 50s. Regarding whether or not this inheritance should be used because it's post-decree or because it's separate property, all property after a decree is separate property. So whether it was inheritance, whether it was income, whether it was winning the lottery, anything that came in is, of course, going to be separate property. That's why the court, the statute, the maintenance statute, at least the one in effect at the time that this was looked at, doesn't even refer to income. It just talks about the ability to meet the other party's needs while also meeting your own needs. So while income is one factor that can be looked at, and certainly the court in this case could have imputed income, she certainly had the basis to be able to do that. So income is one factor or one type of resource, but also any other type of resource can be looked at to determine whether there's the ability to meet the financial need. The attorney's fees is the last issue, and on that, it's definitely an abuse of discretion. The court found here that there was a great disparity between the financial resources. The case law is very clear that the court can look at all financial resources to make that determination. $31,000 versus $1.7 to $1.9 million. The court also then looked at the reasonableness and reduced the fees, actually, so that only 61% of wife's fees were actually awarded.
Ms. Locke, do you know what percentage of your client's attorney's fees were incurred when she was actually proceeding pro se?
I cannot answer that question. I don't know the percentage that when she was pro se, but certainly she was getting advice from counsel behind the scenes, even when she was representing herself pro se.
Okay, Ms. Locke, your time has expired.
Thank you.
I would like to quickly address the preservation issue on Kaufman. Remind the court that under Boulder Plaza, the court said, Court of Appeals said, we reject Summit's contention that BPR waived its right to assert the anti-subrogation rule by failing to timely raise it in district court. BPR raised the issue at hearing. Further, given the course of proceedings, Summit had ample opportunity to contest, and the court had ample opportunity to consider, and if it chose, rule on BPR's argument. I think that allows the Court of Appeals to rule on this, and I would like to draw the Court of Appeals' attention to preservation of error, where in the original opening brief, where it talks about the many times the issue was raised and the magistrate in the district court judge talked about it.
Excuse me, did the case that you just cite involve the magistrate district court relationship, or was it a regular district court appeal to us?
I believe it was regular district court, but I'm not certain. The motion was filed under Kaufman and should have been denied because it didn't meet Kaufman, rather than switch over to 122 because that was perhaps the better way to file the original motion.
Okay, your time has also expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank both counsel for your arguments. They've been very helpful today. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.